Welcoming back to the program one of my favorite experts. He is actually a world-renowned and recognized expert and analyst and person to talk to on guns and crime, founder and president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, author of More Guns, Less Crime, and Gun Control Myths, John R. Lott Jr. on X.com. Dr. Lott, welcome back.
It's great to talk to you again. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, thank you for coming back on, because we have a bit of good news. And I know often our conversations surround the lies of left and, of course, the media, their complicity in lying to Americans about the true uses of firearms and the rights that we retain as Americans in the Second Amendment. But you're bringing good news to us on gun safety, violent crime dropping as more Americans actually decide to carry firearms.
Yeah, I think when the final crime numbers come out in September, we're going to see that we had record drops in violent crime, that we had the lowest murder rate ever recorded. You know, we've had data on murder rates in the United States from 1900 on, so you're talking like 126 years. And during that whole time, up until last year, the lowest murder rate that we ever had in the United States was about 4.5 per 100,000. And it looks like this last year we're actually going to be below 4 per 100,000. So that's, you know, that's like a 1/9 drop from what the previous low was. And that's a big drop from the 5 per 100,000 that we just had in 2024. So, you know, and there are lots of reasons for that, but one of the things that's interesting is just the rate that people are carrying guns. Now, we, for 15 years, have been putting out a report on the number of people with concealed carry permits. But that hasn't been as useful the last few years because we've had this explosion in the number of constitutional carry states. You now have 29 states that people don't need to have a permit to be able to go and carry. And so what we've been doing the last few years is to have a survey that McLaughlin and Associates has done for us on, you know, the rate that people are carrying. And what you find is that general election voters, the people who are kind of the most involved in the political process, almost 30% of them say that they carry at least some of the time. You have about 13% that say that they carry all or most of the time. And then you have about 16, almost 17% that say that they carry at least sometimes or rarely. And that's a big increase from what we saw before. I mean, just 2 years ago, that's about a 5 percentage point increase in what we had seen. And it's really interesting when you go and you break down who are the people that are carrying. It's, you know, obviously general election voters are carrying it and have permits at about twice the rate of non-voters. But if you look at blacks, for example, they make up about 11% of general election voters, but they make up 15% of those who say they carry all or most of the time. For Hispanics, it's even more disproportionate. They also make up about 11% of general election voters, but they make up over 18% of those who carry all or most of the time. One of the things that I found most fascinating was kind of the political views of who is carrying a lot. The group that carries is most overrepresented in terms of the rate that they're carrying are people who classify themselves as very liberal. They actually carry all or most of the time at a higher rate than very conservative who come in second. And both of those extremes carry more than people in the middle of the political process. Democrats as a whole don't carry a huge amount, but the ones who identify as the very liberal, they do carry at high rates. And the other thing is just comparing women and men. Women actually carry at almost exactly the same rate that men do when you're looking at those who carry most or all the time. And it's relatively higher in these constitutional carry states. And I think that's important because, you know, if a woman's being stalked or threatened, she may not have 60 days or 90 days to go and wait for a permit to be able to be granted to her. She may need to be able to go and carry right away. And also just the cost of the permits. One of the people I interviewed for this report that we put out was a young single mom who was putting herself through law school. And, you know, she lived in a not too great part of town because she couldn't really afford a nice apartment. And but she also couldn't afford the cost of going through, you know, the $80 to go and get the permit. And so the fact that it was constitutional carry meant that she was able to go and carry without having to go and get a permit. And she, in fact, had used the gun to protect herself and her young daughter.
That's amazing. So of note, especially interesting to me, is what you're saying about the percentage of the population that Black Americans represent, and then how much more they carry than even conservatives. I'm interested in that, because that's not something we're ever going to hear on the 6 o'clock news. Like, it's just it's a myth that Black Americans don't believe in the Second Amendment, that Hispanics don't believe in it, that conservatives are the only people who care about guns or gun ownership. It's a very interesting bit of information you just shared.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. I think it's particularly important for the reason that if my research convinces me of anything, the people who benefit the most from being able to go and have guns are the ones who are the most likely victims of violent crime. And that overwhelmingly tends to be poor Blacks who live in high crime urban areas. And so the fact, I mean, we've seen over the last decade a huge increase in the rate that Blacks are getting concealed carry permits. Their growth rate in permits is like about 120% faster than the growth rate for whites. But I think that even that kind of understates the sea change that we're seeing, because that's requiring people have to go and pay to go and get a permit. With constitutional carry, they don't have to go and pay for that. And I think in those states, you're actually seeing a much greater increase in the rate that people are carrying. And the thing is, if you want to reduce crime, you have to have it so that the people who are the likely victims of violent crime who are carrying. I could have a wealthy suburb where there's, you know, 100% of the people are carrying, but if there's no crime that's occurring there, you're not going to have any drop in crime. You have to have it so that the people who are the likely victims of crime are the ones who are going to be able to go and defend themselves. And I think, you know, so you're talking about people relatively low income individuals. And we've seen this in other data. When Texas, for example, lowered the permit fee from $140 to $40, there was an explosion in the percent of permits that were going to Blacks. You know, I'll give you a comparison. We have two neighboring states, Illinois and Indiana. In Indiana, about 23% of the adult population has a concealed carry permit. In Illinois, it's 4%. Why the difference? Well, it's pretty easy to explain. The cost, the total cost of going through the process to get a concealed carry permit in Illinois is about $450. The total cost of going through the process to get a concealed carry permit in Indiana is zero. They don't even charge you for the permit and for the background check. And so the thing is, not only does it affect how many people go and get permits, but it also greatly affects the mix of people who go and get permits. In Illinois, it's basically well-to-do individuals who live in the suburbs. In Indiana, it's much more heavily those who live in high-crime, urban, relatively poor, heavily minority zip codes who are going in and getting it. And one of the things that's interesting to me in this whole debate is, like, when Texas reduced its permit fee from $140 to $40, all Republicans voted for reducing the fees. All but one of the Democrats voted against reducing the fees. And you see the same type of thing that occurred in Indiana when they eliminated the fees that they had there. It's a very stark partisan divide. And, you know, Democrats go and claim that they care about the poor, that they care about the minorities, but yet they're the ones who fight tooth and nail against making it affordable for people who are the likely victims of violent crime to be able to go and defend themselves. Look, anybody who's read my academic work knows that I think police are extremely important in being able to go and stop crime. I think they're the single most important factor. But the police themselves know that they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's occurred. And the question is what people should do when they're having to confront a criminal by themselves. And it's just interesting to me that how systematically Democrats will push for things that make it costly for the minorities to be able to go and protect themselves.
So what's the answer as far as messaging on the political right on this issue? Because we know for a fact, due to your research, I can tell anecdotal tales, that it's ludicrous to try to get a concealed carry permit in a Democrat jurisdiction. I think of Deneen Borelli and her husband, Tom Borelli. They're prominent New Yorkers. They have sustained attacks on, the kind of online threats and things. They filed police reports. They're well known to the NYPD because of the things that have been, thrown at them online. And they were unable to get concealed carry permits in New York, even though they could demonstrate a very real and present danger to themselves. Meanwhile, any Tom, Dick, or Jenny who meets the criteria in a state like Missouri, you don't have to be famous. You don't have to be known. You don't even have to have threats. Would you like a concealed carry permit? We actually have a concealed carry automatically. You're automatically allowed to conceal carry in the state of Missouri unless the jurisdiction you're in, so the municipality, has a specific law in the books that says you must have a class and, go through a permitting process. So it's a patchwork, right? If you want to just, concealed carry, it's more difficult. It's better to just go get the permit. But the point is, it's very easy to do here. And we have much lower crime than New York, obviously much lower population. Our entire state doesn't have the population of the city of Manhattan. But the issue is access. How do we talk about that to get people to understand that Republicans really want you to have access to it if you want it?
Right. Well, and it's who they want to be able to get to have access to it. We have the Bruin decision in 2022 that supposedly got away that kind of arbitrariness in terms of who could get permits. Obviously, states like California and New York have tried to fight back in different ways by imposing other regulations there. I had been a few years ago, before the Bruin decision, I'd gotten a list of all the concealed carry permit holders in Los Angeles County. They had like 330 people who had a concealed carry permit and an adult population of over 8 million people in the county. So a tiny percentage. But when you go through it, what you see, it's basically wealthy, politically connected white males, some Asian males that are there. And for example, only about 7% of permit holders were women. Only about 5% of permit holders were black. Only about 6% of permit holders were Hispanic. 54% of Los Angeles County is Hispanic. Is it just that, and nationwide, I was just talking about the rate that women are carrying almost at the same rate that men are. But is it just with only 7% getting a permit in Los Angeles County that women in Los Angeles aren't stalked, that they're not threatened, that they don't feel like they're likely to be victims of violent crime and want to go and defend themselves? No, I mean, the point is that the powers that be, the Democrats who determine who has a, quote, good reason for going and getting a permit, have decided that the explanations that the women have there for why they need a permit just don't cut it. And, you had blacks nationwide make up about 13% of permit holders. I mentioned before, they make about 15% of those who carry all or most of the time. But they only get 5%, only got 5% of the permits in Los Angeles County. Is it blacks who live there? They're just not victims of violent crime like they are in the rest of the country? I mean, nobody takes that type of thing seriously, but, you know, they just made decisions that you had to be politically connected on the right side to Pratt, who is running for mayor in Los Angeles. When he was on his TV show, The Hills, he got all sorts of death threats, both he and his family. And so the Los Angeles Police Department and or police officers and his security team advised him and his wife to get guns and advised them to apply for a concealed carry permit. But it's my understanding is that even though he was getting tons of death threats, he was denied being able to do this back, you know, a decade and a half ago when he tried to go and get a permit. And so, you know, there are lots of people. You look at New York City before the Bruin decision, the types of people who would get permits would be people like labor union bosses or, you know, Arthur Sulzberger, who is the publisher for the New York Times, ironically enough, you know, other people like that. You know, and I'm glad that they're able to go and protect themselves. But, you know, the thing is, honestly, they're not the ones who are the most likely victims of crime. And so, you know, what about the guys who lived in Harlem or some other part of the city who would be facing real threats? But, you know, they apparently their lives weren't valued as much as by the Democrats as these wealthy, politically connected individuals. And, you know, it's just not this. You look at gun control laws generally. So one of the things that Democrats like to push are these so-called universal background checks, these background checks on the private transfers of guns. You know, if you and I lived in Washington, D.C., and I'm going to go and give you a gun, it costs about $125 to go through the background check to legally transfer the gun from myself to you. But just to give you an idea of how they set this up, not only do you have the $125, but they set it up so you have to do a separate background check on each gun. So if I'm going to give you four guns, it's just John giving Stacy four guns. It's just one person giving the same person all four guns. You think just one background check, right? But no. And across the country, states that have these types of background check laws require a separate background check on each gun. So rather than $125, which is bad enough, it would cost $500. And I want somebody to give me a benign explanation for why you would set it up like that, other than just to make it as costly as possible to go and transfer guns to somebody. Who do you think you're stopping from being able to go and get guns in that? You're not stopping wealthy people from being able to go and do it.
Not union bosses. Right? Not union bosses. Right. It's more like the people that you described at the open of our chat tonight who are, you know, they're 15% of the black community carrying firearms. Some of that 15% are doing so because they live in a neighborhood where they're continually carjacked. They're you know, breaking and entering, drive-by shootings.
Right.
And they can't get out of that neighborhood. So they go and they get their concealed carry and they carry all the time for their own protection. And you mentioned, you know, it's Deneen Borelli, it's Pratt out in California. I dare say, and I'm not trying to be hyperbolic, but I dare say that the people in New York don't care if conservatives get shot. The people in California would rather that, you know, Pratt was taken out than have him beating a Democrat for mayor of L.A. That sounds really like far out to say, but the comments online support it. The surveys that show that Democrats are much more they're much more accepting of political violence against conservatives than we are of any political violence at all. And it goes to the very heart of this issue, which is if you know someone wants to kill you, the most natural response is to arm yourself so that you can preserve your life. And the places where it's hardest to do that are all run by Democrats.
All right. Well, the people that they let get permission are basically the people who agree with them politically. So rather than you know, just the general average everyday person or somebody that they disagree with politically.
The political disagreement is really the seed kernel that drives all of the behaviors that end up having violent after effects. So let's talk a little bit.
There's a recent YouGov survey that came out that indicated that people who classified themselves as very liberal were 8 times more likely to view political violence, assassination, as morally acceptable than people who identified themselves as very conservative. I mean, it's just an amazing gap that's there.
And it's demonstrated in how many more people who are conservative have been shot at, or I think about the baseball field with Steve Scalise and the impacts on him. Charlie Kirk was killed, President Trump, multiple assassination attempts. We don't even know about all of the threats that his family has undergone because they don't make them all public. So obviously this is a problem that sits and is more acceptable on one side of the political aisle than the other.
Right. Well, we've done some reports on kind of the difference between right-wing and left-wing political violence. I know the Biden administration and groups like the ADL want to go and say that this is a right-wing problem. But the thing is, when you actually go through and look at their cases, it's just ridiculous. So, you know, you have people. So if somebody's a racist, they automatically classify them as right-wing. But you have people like the Buffalo, the Anti-Defamation League claims that over the last 3 years that I saw their reports from 2022 through 2024, that all extremist murders in the United States were by, quote, right-wingers. The biggest one they had was the Buffalo mass murder in Buffalo, New York, at the supermarket there, where he had gone to shoot up blacks. And they say that he's a racist, so he's a right-winger. The thing is, if we actually read his manifesto, the guy refers to himself as a socialist. He refers to himself as a mild-mannered authoritarian leftist. He refers to himself as an eco-fascist. The guy hated minorities because he thought people having kids was damaging the environment, and he thought that minorities were having a disproportionate number of kids. Now, I may live very isolated, and I don't maybe get out and talk to a lot of conservatives, but I don't really know any conservatives who are upset about people having kids. I really don't know any conservatives who go and call themselves, you know, the type of eco-fascist or socialist or whatever. But, you know, if you look at these things, or like the Walmart shooting in Texas that occurred in El Paso, and I can't remember if it was El Paso or San Antonio, that one had very similar type of environmentalist views that were there. And yet they get classified because they were racist as right-wingers. You go down the list, there are all sorts of ones that they don't even include, like the Nashville school shooting. There you had a trans individual who, if anybody reads her diaries, she hated whites. She was upset about the kids at the school because they were, you know, called them white crackers who had, you know, wealthy parents and things like that, and thought how unfair it was. You know, you read through and it's just like one left-wing trope after another that she has there. And yet they don't, they say we can't determine what her political views were. And, you know, I think if you go through that, and then they go and they include people like Aryan race type people who were in prison, you know, gang members who went and you have an Aryan guy who killed a 13-year-old that he was sexually assaulting. There's no political violence there. You just had a sick individual that was doing it, or another one of those gang members who, after he got out of prison, apparently sexually assaulted a 2-year-old and killed her that was living on near the property that he was. But basically, you know, and the gangs there, are they racist? Yeah. But to go and say that they have some type of right-wing political views, and to go and include it even when there's no evidence that the murders involved any type of political views at all, is just crazy stuff. But they get away with it, and the media repeats it.
So the answer is the truth, and there's a lot of it. Before we close out here, I can't let you go, Dr. Lott, without pointing people to crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. I'm over here at your CPRC original research page, and you have a lot of your work gets published in other locales so that, you know, more people can read it. You have the discussion that we're having tonight. You have that work here at Real Clear Investigations, Violent Crime Drops as More Americans Pack Heat. If you're listening, I have a tweet with a link to this story already out there. You can also go to SiriusXM Patriot account channel. You can follow Dr. Lott. He posts everything there as well. But I wanted to highlight something else here. If you go down, there's you have the piece at Real Clear Investigations. You have it's like an abstract here where you have the new survey on the rate of people carrying concealed handguns, and you shared that in the beginning. But you also have, just a little bit down, May 9th of 2026, under defensive gun use, original research, defensive gun uses occur about 5 times more often than criminals use a gun in crime, which means we would have way more crime if Americans weren't defensively using their guns to stop criminals from basically killing them, robbing them, attacking them, carjacking them. It's happening every day, and it's never mentioned in the news.
Right. Well, you know, part of that's understandable. So if you have, you know, about 95% of the time that people use guns defensively, they just brandish it. They don't need to fire the gun. And in less than 1% of the time that they do use guns defensively is the attacker killed or wounded. So the thing is, if you're an editor of a news bureau and you have two stories that come across your desk, in one case, there's a dead body on the ground. In another case, let's say a woman's brandished a gun, the would-be criminals run away, no shots are fired, no dead body, you're not even sure what crime would have been committed, which story are you going to run with? I think anybody, I know I would think that it's more newsworthy to run with the first story. Now, the thing is, what makes something newsworthy is very different than what reflects reality. You know, if we care about safety, we care about both stories. We care about, you know, the 95% of the time that simply brandishing a gun caused the criminal to break off the attack. That's just as important. But it's, people need to understand what makes something newsworthy isn't always something that reflects reality.
Yeah, it's the newsworthiness that they're using to judge whether or not something should be a story. But I also see other things, Dr. Lott, that are completely unnewsworthy that get plenty of airtime. And
yeah, no, I agree. Right? There's lots of bias. I'm just saying there's a lot you can explain without relying on bias in that sense. But, you know, you and I could talk for an hour about all the bias in many ways in the media on guns and other issues.
Yes. Yes, we can. Close us out here. Anything else you'd like us to know? We're just grateful for your time and also for all of the work that you do to compile the research, to discuss it, help us to understand it, to point out the most salient facts, and also just the fact that you're standing, you know, kind of like a pillar in the middle of an oncoming rush of water, and the water keeps rushing past you. It's all of the disinformation about guns and about Americans' use of guns. And then there's you standing there screaming into the whirlwind the truth. So we really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you being there. Help get the information out. But nobody needs to take my word for any of this stuff. All the links to the underlying data are on our website there at crimeresearch.org, and people can double check everything themselves.
Fantastic. It's crimeresearch.org. You have to go there. I'm telling you, out of all the websites you can go to where you can grab facts quickly, this is one of those. If you need something to use in your arsenal in talking to people about this, especially if you have family members who won't leave you alone because you own guns or because you support the Second Amendment, crimeresearch.org is where you should go. Dr. John Lott, Jr., thank you for being here tonight.
Well, thank you for being there.
All right. Have a great evening. And we have more to come here on SiriusXM. Stay with us.